I'm Brandi Cruz. It's official. A bipartisan group has filed a lawsuit against Washington State's new income tax. Plus, SEIU mob bosses will stop at nothing. And Seattle's socialist mayor ramps up her efforts to hide the city's homeless before the World Cup, even if it means putting them into a type of housing that doesn't seem to be working. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. It is official. A lawsuit has officially been filed against Washington State's new and very much illegal and unconstitutional state income tax. The lawsuit filed by the Citizen Action Defense Fund on behalf of a long list of plaintiffs. This includes small business owners. It includes farmers. It includes industry groups like the Building Industry Association of Washington, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the Ethnic Chamber of Commerce Coalition, farm associations, etc., all against the new state income tax. There was a press conference this morning at 10 a.m., led again by the Citizen Action Defense Fund, where they introduced what I really believe. This got me fired up. If you're depressed about what's happening in the state, the introduction of the legal team that's going to be leading the charge on this gave me a little bit of hope.
Rob is a Republican who is a former attorney general and partner at ORIC, in addition to being an experienced litigator on constitutional and taxation issues. Phil is a Democrat, former Washington State Supreme Court Justice, former Senate Judiciary Chair, and partner at Talmadge Fitzpatrick. He's one of the best appellate advocates in the state. We could not be more pleased to have such a strong and bipartisan legal team to lead this challenge.
Yeah, two of the most brilliant legal minds in the state of Washington are going to be fighting this income tax. One a Republican, one a Democrat, one a former attorney general of the state of Washington, the other a former state Supreme Court justice. And their legal arguments here are sound. And I think that's the thing that is really, I guess, frustrating in advance for me, is if the state Supreme Court were to find the income tax constitutional, despite all the very clear evidence that it's not, and do so even when the case is argued by two of the most brilliant legal minds in the state who are bipartisan, one Democrat, one Republican, then you really know the system is screwed and the system can't be saved. And maybe we all ought to flee the state of Washington. So Rob McKenna, who was on fire this morning, usually Rob McKenna is very, can a man be demure? He's very professional, you know, he's very calm. Very matter of fact, but I will say, I was watching him this morning and I thought more than ever that he really needs to run for governor again. Here he is laying out the legal arguments.
We have clear language in the Constitution, which was voted in by the voters, has never changed. Its meaning has never changed. We have a series of Supreme Court decisions that have all reached the same conclusion, emphatically concluding that income is property and therefore income taxes have to follow the rules for property taxes. And we have no fewer than 10 voter decisions to keep the language in the Constitution the way it is or otherwise reject a state income tax. So really, the law could not be clear here, which is exactly why the Superior Court and the Court of Appeals invalidated Seattle's income tax, and it's why the courts are going to invalidate the new state income tax, which, by the way, legislators knew was unconstitutional. They have said publicly, well, we know that the Superior Court is going to invalidate this tax, but don't worry, it's going to the Supreme Court. What they're saying is, we know this is unconstitutional. We know this is illegal. We voted for it anyway, which means implicitly that they violated their oath to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state. And we, the legislature, choose not to do what all the other legislatures have done, which have wanted a graduated income tax, which was to send a constitutional amendment to the ballot to allow voters to decide. This legislature is doing everything it can to avoid giving the voters a say. They don't want this issue to be in front of the voters. They're hoping the state Supreme Court ultimately will decide that the unchanged words of the Constitution suddenly mean something different than they plainly mean and that every Supreme Court panel before has concluded.
And I love that he calls them out for violating their oath of office. And every single one of them should be removed from it, for it. They violated their oath of office by signing into law, by passing and then Governor Ferguson signing into law, a bill that some of them even acknowledge is against the state constitution. State Senator Manka Dhingra, on her campaign website during this debate, still said she was against a state income tax because it's unconstitutional. And she voted for it anyway. She should be removed from office for it. As I mentioned, so the Democrat, Phil Talmadge, who was on the state Supreme Court for a long time, you know, one of the things I think he brings to this is he is really about the legality of it. Because he even said during the press conference this morning that he personally, and he was a former state lawmaker, you know, he's not even really opposed to the idea of having an income tax.
I've been involved as a legislator in efforts to secure tax reform that included an income tax. I support the idea of tax reform in Washington that could include an income tax. The bottom line here is the legislature has to enact this kind of change in the law by a constitutional amendment. They are hoping that the Supreme Court will change its view about whether or not property income is property.
And I think that is really a winning argument in the court of public opinion when you have Democrats and progressive voters who are going to be sold this, oh, it's taxing the rich, taxing the rich. Here you have this guy who he even tried when he was a lawmaker to help pass some sort of income tax. But he said, but we wanted to do it in a legal, constitutional manner. And we wanted voters to decide. So we ought to be able to find enough Democrats and progressives who might support the idea of an income tax, but still believe it should be done in line with the state constitution. So that's a message that really needs to be sent out to the masses. So here's an interesting thing. Governor Bob Ferguson, there's this clip that was aired on Fox 13 where, you know, he's reacting to the fact that former Attorney General Rob McKenna is going to be one of the people leading the legal challenge against the income tax. Listen to freaking Bob Ferguson.
I'm very familiar with Rob McKenna. As AG, he was on the opposite side of many cases we brought, and we've never lost a case when Rob litigated on the other side. So we feel confident that we'll prevail yet again against him in this lawsuit.
So smug. You know, the funny thing is I think they're fairly friendly. You know, I don't remember when it was. I'm trying to think who passed away that I did an interview with both of them back when I was on Legacy News. But I'm wondering if that friendship is splintering a little bit, because, I mean, that's sort of a, you know, I mean, that's sort of a shady thing to say. But then Rob McKenna responded to that criticism today. And again, I thought it was pretty good.
I think it's very telling that Bob wants to personalize this and doesn't want to address the legal issues involved here. He was attorney general. He's a lawyer. He understands what it means to have a plain language in the Constitution and to have a series of Supreme Court decisions. This is not a boxing match. This is an important question of law, but he doesn't want to talk about the law. Instead, he signed into law a bill that clearly violates the law today, which is why he and the legislators who voted for it need the Supreme Court to change the law for them. And as of the day they voted for it, it was illegal. It violated the Constitution. And unlike former governors like Dan Evans, who had the courage and political skill to put together a coalition to put this to the voters as a constitutional amendment, Governor Ferguson was unable to do that.
Man, he's saying Ferguson doesn't have courage or political skill. Both of which I would agree with. So there's this school of thought. And In fact, I was just watching our live chat and I had someone in there bring up this school of thought as well. So I thought I'd respond to it, that the strategy of Democrats that they're relying on and hoping that the state Supreme Court rules it unconstitutional on the basis that it has to be uniform. Because remember, our state constitution does not prohibit an income tax. It prohibits a tax on property that's not a flat 1%. So, of course, singling out a specific group of people and taxing them at a rate of 9.9% is blatantly unconstitutional. I mean, a first-year law student, a five-year-old could understand the concept of that. So there's this school of thought that they're doing it intentionally. They want, essentially, the state Supreme Court to say, oh, you can do this, but it's got to be flat, and then sort of change things and say, well, we have no choice. The state Supreme Court told us this is what we have to do. But the thing about that is then it becomes much easier for voters to challenge. The only difficulty this time around in having the successful result 10 times before that we've had with voters and the income tax is they are narrowly they're tailoring it to the rich. And they know that that theme in today's, you know, soundbite political environment works with people. So they know that this time around, and it's very possible that voters say, oh, yeah, I don't mind a tax on the rich. I don't mind a tax on the rich. So the only problem with that long-term theory some people have is even if they ultimately do that and they get the state Supreme Court to kind of give them a ruling that paves the way for, hey, we need to have an income tax on everyone. It's the only way that we can do it. According to the Supreme Court, still it's going to be challenged via initiative with voters, and then they can't sell it as a tax on just the rich. So I feel like that would just fail. So there's a lot of stuff here. Now, I'm watching this morning, and Nicole and I are sitting there, and I'm like, this made me really hyped. Because I feel like, again, two most brilliant legal minds in the state of Washington, if anyone has a chance to make a successful case, it's them. With the help of CADF, and I should say in the interest of full disclosure, as you know, the Citizen Action Defense Fund has represented me in a public records lawsuit and my Free Press lawsuit. We won our public records lawsuit, 3-0 on the State Court of Appeals. So I have a lot of confidence in the Citizen Action Defense Fund as well. So I was like, all like, yeah, this really got me fired up again. And I'm thinking, like, the great thing about this, having a Republican and Democrat, is the media can't crap on it as easily. They can't crap on it as like, oh, this is just conservatives and Republicans and horrible rich people, because the plaintiffs are, you know, small farmers and small business owners. And I love that they even added the ethnic chamber of commerce. It's not just white people either. It's not just white people. It's a whole coalition. So I thought you have that going for you. So I'm thinking there, and I'm joking with Nicole. I'm like, I mean, what can the media really say bad about this effort? Oh, well, then comes Jim Bruner of the Seattle Times with this doozy of a question.
On this issue of them, the legislature and the governor signing this into law, even though it goes against past court precedent, how do you juxtapose that with efforts by the conservatives who have passed many laws in many states, knowing for years they violated the, you know, the Roe v. Wade precedent, but they did it in an effort to try to change that precedent?
Leave it to the Seattle Times to find one way to spin this. Oh, but what about abortion? What about abortion? Roe v. Wade, red meat for the progressives. You guys are complaining that they're trying to challenge this, the constitutionality of this, even though there's all this precedent. Well, what about Republicans? Despite all the precedent on Roe v. Wade, seeking to challenge it. And look, abortion's not a constitutionally protected right. We're talking about constitutional language here. So you have to absolutely reach so far, so deep, for the disingenuous angle that the Seattle Times pulled up in that press conference. Just when I think, no way they can spin this, bipartisan, farmers, small business owners, solid legal standing, precedent on their side. Jim Bruner, lead political reporter at the Times, like, well, what about abortion and Roe v. Wade? You know, we know what side the Seattle Times is on. We know what side the Seattle Times is on. Absolutely unreal. So even though I feel pretty jazzed up after that press conference this morning, and I feel maybe more confident than I have in the ability to fight back a little bit, what have I said before about the opposition to this and the two initiatives, you know, to protect girls' sports and parental rights? We are facing an enemy that knows no bottom, that our opponent knows no bottom. In this case, they'll pass a blatantly unconstitutional tax. They'll violate their oath of office. On the other issues, I mean, they will spew lie after lie after lie, and it doesn't matter to them because they have no morality. So it's really difficult to fight an enemy that has no morality. And one of those entities that has no morality is SEIU, that will absolutely get involved in this fight. I'm going to talk about the depths that SEIU is willing to go to maintain power and control and keep money coming in. First, if you are looking for ways to save money, gas prices are high, as we discussed on the show yesterday. Energy prices are very high for homes and for businesses. highly recommend reaching out to our friends at First Mark Insurance, and they can help you with both. They can help you with your personal insurance. They can help you with your business insurance. I go through First Mark for both. Absolutely love it. I mean, it has been such a game changer in having to wonder and worry about what insurance I need, what I don't need. Do we have enough? Do we have the right insurance? They take care of everything for you. You start by taking the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And that's really just saying, hey, First Mark's like, give us a little bit of your time to prove to you that you know, you can trust us with your insurance needs. They go out, they shop the market for you, they come back with their recommendation. So many Undivided viewers and listeners are now also members of the First Mark family, like Connie, Debbie, Carol, Robin, who's saving $100 a month, who couldn't use an extra $1,200 a year. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies, so they always have your best interest in mind. All right, I've said before, I've compared the big unions to the mob, and that's how they operate. The Washington Education Association, key culprit in this. I mean, we've heard from teachers who have tried to leave the union, who have been shamed and, you know, really aggressive tactics to try to guilt them into staying in the union, even though by law you no longer have to. So the Washington Education Association is going to be a huge player in the fight to keep the income tax, in the fight to keep boys and girls sports, in the fight to stop an expansion of parental rights, just like they were big players in the initiatives that would have repealed certain taxes. So why do they get involved in so many things? Like the Washington Education Association gets involved in things that have nothing to do with education. I mean, they'll get involved in big climate policy, they'll get involved in capital gains, they'll get involved in income taxes, because for these unions like WEA and SEIU, the Service International, what is it? Workers Union International? SEIU, why can't I? Service Employees International Union. Thank you. Nicole's like, I'll Google Brandy. Service Employees International Union. It's because they do well when the government coffers are big and fat. The bigger government is, the more money it has to give out in lucrative contracts where there is very little oversight. I've given an example of the Washington Education Association getting, and this is off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact number, something like $70 million for this teacher training program where they'd only sent 12 people through it so far, and they dramatically got all this extra money from the state. And why is this? Why do, when government grows and these new taxes pass and they're challenged by voters and then they stay intact, why do these unions start getting a lot of money in government contracts, extra work to keep the unions big and strong? Well, it's because they turn around and they give a bunch of that money back to the Democratic Party. So it's this sick cycle, and it's a cycle that's done with your money. So there's this phenomenal story in City Journal written by Christopher Rufo and Kenneth Schrupp. And this focuses on California, but the exact same tactics are going to be used, are being used, and will be employed in Washington State. It just shows you the type of people who we're dealing with here, where they have no bottom, they have no moral compass, and so it becomes very, very difficult to fight him. So the headline of this article, Gavin Newsom's $30 billion fraud magnet. It says, California Governor Gavin Newsom is embroiled in a national fraud scandal. Thus far, much of the coverage has focused on alleged schemes related to unemployment insurance, hospice care, and food stamps. However, in this exclusive investigation, we shine a light on one of California's largest initiatives, the In-Home Supportive Services Program, or IHSS for short. It essentially pays family members and other people to provide home-based care for the elderly and disabled, and it costs the state of California about $30 billion a year. So specifically, it's looking into this. And this is when you get into some of these home health care unions, et cetera. So it says, perhaps the biggest beneficiaries of California's IHSS program are labor unions, which have enrolled more than 600,000 IHSS providers. Two leading unions for the state's in-home care workforce, SEIU Local 2015 and Union Domestic Workers, UDW, collectively raked in more than $149 million in dues in 2024. Both have a direct stake in the program's expansion, since every new IHSS worker is a potential dues-paying member. So I want you to keep up here. They've got a $30 billion program. It's focused on in-home supportive services. The two unions they mentioned, SEIU and UDW, helped enroll 600,000 of those providers, and every single one of them is a potential dues-paying member. So every single one of them has the potential to pad the pockets of the unions. And what do they do with that money? These unions are some of the most powerful institutions in California politics and collectively send millions of dollars to the state's Democratic establishment. SEIU Local 2015 contributed $2 million to Newsom's anti-recall campaign. They spent $2 million in favor of Prop 50, which was redrawing the state's congressional district to favor Democrats. They donated over $90,000 to Newsom across his two campaigns, and the same with UDW. So you see what's happening here in this sixth cycle. They get big and fat and rich off of big programs and that are funded by big taxes, like Washington State's income tax, which they're going to use to expand the size of government, and they're going to use the money that comes in to reward their cronies and their allies in the unions. And then in turn, the unions take a little chunk of that and they put it back into the campaigns of people like Governor Bob Ferguson, of people like Senator Jamie Peterson in California, in that case, people like Gavin Newsom, who are going to keep the money coming into them. I mean, it's really easy to understand, but it happens out in the open and nobody in these deep blue states has the power really to do anything about it. But when I talk about mob mentality, I've never seen on the record depictions like I'm reading in this City Journal article about the literal mob tactics that these unions will use to extract money and to build wealth. So it gives examples. SEIU Local 2015 and United Domestic Workers of America have allegedly used coercive tactics to expand their membership. Nathan Vu, a caregiver in San Diego, says UDW pressured him to join during his IHSS orientation. So he signed up to be one of these in-home caregivers, essentially. He has an orientation. UDW, the union, shows up and they pressure him to join. He says he declined, but claims the union began deducting dues from his paycheck anyway. He tells them on the record to City Journal, I vividly remember not wanting to enroll in the union. I specifically said no. He says he told UDW to stop deducting dues and demanded that they provide a copy of his membership agreement and proof of authorization. UDW, he claims, provided neither and kept deducting dues for a full year before terminating his membership. There was one other example, even worse, had to do with SEIU 2015, again, in California. But you don't think that SEIU in Washington, one of the most powerful unions here, is conducting this kind of conduct? It says SEIU 2015, which represents thousands of long-term care workers, has allegedly one-upped even the behavior of UDW. According to one former member, the group locked IHSS workers in a room and coerced them to become members or wouldn't let them leave. It says in a sworn statement filed as part of a lawsuit against the union, a woman named Chaquan May alleges that in September of 2023, the union coerced her into signing up for a membership at, again, an IHSS orientation. May claimed that union employees locked the doors and told her and the others, we're waiting for everyone to sign, quote, no one is leaving until everyone signs. So that worker later went on, again, in these legal proceedings, to claim that she was forced to sign under duress and did, and the union became, you know, started to deduct dues and take dues. She claimed to have sent a certified mail opt-out letter the following day, which the union ignored and didn't respond to City Journal's request for comment. But knowing what we know about these unions, and knowing what is on the line for them, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in dues made possible by tax money being extracted from the citizens of states like California and Oregon and Washington, it illustrates why they will stoop to any level to make sure that things like Washington State's new income tax survive. Because they have a lot of money on the line. And so I would tell people, really anything put out, political action committees, mailers, anything put out between now and November by the unions, I would encourage, I mean, I know you guys know, but I would encourage friends and family to understand that this isn't them out of the goodness of their heart. Oh, we're the Washington Education Association. We just care about good education for kids. That's why we're opposing these things. That's why we don't want the Parental Rights Initiative. That's why we support the income tax. Make sure you tell them the financial incentive they have to be vilifying these efforts. The same with SEIU. There is a lot of money at stake, not only in their union dues, but also in the big fat government contracts that they're going to get as a reward from the state of Washington. Coming up next, Seattle's socialist mayor is in a mad dash to hide the homeless before the World Cup, except her plan isn't going to work at all, and she's not listening to anyone who's telling her the clear problems with it. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you worried or just have questions about things like AI, crypto, what's happening with tech, some of the layoffs? Well, I think those are legitimate questions, certainly. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, they're always focused on risk management when it comes to your retirement portfolio, and so that means that they're constantly looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So Zach also said there's a lot of people calling him lately for a second opinion on their retirement portfolio, given what's happening abroad in Iran and the Strait and oil prices and all of that. So I think it's a good time just to, again, you get a second opinion, all sorts of things. Why not get, I mean, hell, I got a second opinion once on how much it would cost to replace a cracked windshield in my car. So why would you not get that, which is very expensive, by the way. The modern vehicle, with all its bells and whistles, really expensive to replace a front windshield. I am venting, obviously, because I had to do that recently. But why would you not get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio? It's such a big thing. I mean, in your life, there's probably nothing else more important you'll do than save for retirement so you can enjoy your life. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Make sure to tell Zach that you heard about him right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. Now, I like to believe that the socialist mayor of Seattle is seeing the light and she really wants to deal fundamentally with the homeless crisis that has plagued the city for many, many years. I have a hard time believing that because she was very much in the stop the sweeps camp when she ran for office. She is a socialist after all, isn't really a tough on crime, tough on substance abuse kind of person. And I think that's the only kind of person who would be able to deal with the homeless crisis in a meaningful way. But I think why she's engaging in some sweeps, contrary to what her voter base wants, because they're very anti-sweep, is I think she's very worried about the World Cup. I mean, this is a huge event coming to Seattle in the first year that she's in office, and I think she understands that it needs to go well or it's going to be very, very embarrassing for her. So I really think for her, this is more about get the homeless out of sight and out of mind just long enough for the World Cup. And we've seen that, and she's not the only mayor that's done that. I mean, Jenny Durkin used to do stuff like that. Bruce Harrell, I mean, before the, what was it, the MLB All-Star game, I think it was, where they came in and cleared all the tents and stuff and RVs, derelict RVs from around the stadium. And when he was asked about it, he said, oh, no, those were routine sweeps. Sure, got it. I'm sure they absolutely were. So one of the things she's really zeroed in on is she wants to expand. She has this goal of expanding tiny house villages dramatically. So she had a community briefing last night talking about her tiny house plan and specifically about a new property they want to place tiny houses on Armory Way in the Interbay neighborhood.
We can't just keep moving people from place to place and calling that progress. I'm committed to opening 1,000 new units of shelter and emergency housing this year.
And I agree with the notion that you can't keep moving people place to place and calling that progress. Now, there's some usefulness in that, in the sense that you can't just let these homeless camps grow and fester to the point where there's danger and murder and drug abuse and it's ruining neighborhoods. And you also, I do believe, as mean as it sounds, you got to keep them moving along. This is a transient population. There's a reason why certain states have seen this problem grow exponentially. And it's because there's a certain level of acceptance for it. I don't think it should ever be acceptable to have a tent in a public park where kids play for even one day. So yeah, moving them from place to place has a purpose and letting them know, like, I don't know where you're going to go, but you can't stay here. But you also have to come up with more long-term solutions. But she continues to believe this lie of housing first. Oh, just put them in some shelter, put a tiny little roof over their head. And I've said you could put them in a mansion. And just because they're in a mansion, if they still die from substance abuse, then have you really improved the situation at all? The other issue is our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, also our friend Jonathan Cho, they have continued to expose the problems with these tiny house villages, and that you just take this behavior, very antisocial, dangerous behavior that's happening in a tent, and you put it in a tiny house village, that is still problematic. For instance, she got sent, Andrea, a video from this guy who's living in a tiny house and took a video of himself in the tiny house doing drugs and sent it to Andrea.
What's up, dude?
What's up, dude?
Check me out.
Checking you out.
In my tiny home, 1020 South Myrtle Street. What's good? Anyways, I'm just about to chief on my arm, dude, and get all high on the fatty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, chief on my bong, which I would have been like, okay, that's legal, and get all high on the fetty. So he's getting high on fentanyl in a tiny house. And Katie Wilson thinks, what, that's a win? That's a victory? That's progress? It's none of those things. It's out of sight, out of mind, which is going to do nothing to deal with our actual homeless crisis. And the other issue is getting them to agree to go to these tiny houses. I mean, it is very hard to get them to agree to leave these encampments. Andrea has this video with this woman, and there's like, there's tiny houses available, but instead, these individuals are building ramshackle tiny houses of their own, like on sidewalks.
Felicia and Bear live in this cabin here in Ballard with the chimney.
There is a building in the middle of our street that has a chimney. This is something that I have not seen since the pandemic.
And she told us that there is a real problem with people accepting tiny houses and permanent supportive housing and apartments.
And tonight at City Hall, they're talking about building 1,000 more shelter units, and then this just miraculously goes away. Does that actually happen?
I don't think so. I don't think you can just throw more money at the problem and it just disappear. This is something in our culture, our subculture, and there's a whole inner working within your guys' society of our society, and people are going to go where the people are, where the drugs are, and you can't just expect people to be inside after they've been outside for years.
Yeah, you have to solve their substance abuse issue. You have to deal with their mental health issue. And Katie Wilson, if she actually cared about dealing with the issue, she'd be out there. She'd be hearing those things. She'd be inviting Andrea Suarez. Tell me what you're hearing. You know, tell me about, you know, what you've witnessed in these tiny house villages that is making this so difficult. But Katie Wilson not only doesn't want to have those conversations, she doesn't even want to be confronted with the questions about the reality of what's happening in these places.
Mayor, there's video evidence of rampant drug use inside tiny house villages. First of all, are you aware of that?
Do you have another question, sir?
Are you kidding me? And we're blurring drug abuse because YouTube doesn't like us showing images of drug abuse. So that's why we're blurring it. But there's literal video of it. She's the mayor at a community event where she's talking about this exact issue, tiny house villages, how she's like, yay, they're great. And Jonathan Cho goes up to her, and clearly she's taking questions because there's another reporter that she defers to. Can you play the clip one more time? I mean, what kind of leader is this?
Mayor, there's video evidence of rampant drug use inside tiny house villages. First of all, are you aware of that?
Do you have another question, sir?
Insane. Insane. Very legitimate question. Very relevant to what she's there to discuss. Totally ignores him. Turns to the other person. Do you have something to ask that I would find acceptable? There's no way in hell that's going to be the woman with that attitude and that mentality who's going to be able to fix the homeless crisis that has plagued the city of Seattle for 15 years. Let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. All right, gas prices suck. Let's just say it. Gas prices suck. And in a lot of ways, it's because of Donald Trump and Iran. But in Washington state, they suck even worse because of our gas taxes and the Climate Commitment Act and all of that stuff. So a lot going on that has raised gas prices, and it sucks. And I really hope that it ends soon. There are some states, however, that are working to give a little respite to citizens by having like a gas tax holiday, right? Saying, hey, while this is happening in Iran, let's control what we can control And if we can reduce, even temporarily, our state gas tax, let's do that. So there are some places considering it. West Virginia lawmakers call for gas tax holiday. Indiana governor suspending gas tax for 30 days. A New York gas price hits $4.07, sparking calls for a gas tax holiday. Geez, I would love $4.07. Illinois Republican lawmakers introduce a bill for a six-month gas sales tax pause. In Georgia, drivers are going to see a little relief. Georgia Governor Kemp is suspending the gas tax there for 60 days among rising prices, which is so funny because in the video, it's got gas at $3.99. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, seriously, I wish. And that's the difference between places that are impacted, where gas is impacted by Iran, versus places like Washington, where gas is impacted by Iran, high taxes, and bizarre, bogus climate policies. So could it happen here? Could they say, you know what, our gas is like $6 a gallon for a short period of time. We can give people, I mean, Bob Ferguson has talked a ton about giving relief to regular Washingtonians. It's the reason he said he signed the income tax on millionaires. But when it comes to whether he would sign or put into place or ask lawmakers to come back for an emergency session to give us just a couple months relief on the gas tax, which is like a dollar in Washington state, he won't even answer questions. This is from Cairo 7. Gas tax holiday, don't hold your breath in Washington. It says gas and diesel prices continue to climb, as we know. They talk about the other states that are working on or have already granted gas tax holidays. It says Cairo 7 first asked Governor Bob Ferguson about the gas tax on March 19th. He said at the time, there are a lot of things that are being considered. The actions of the Trump administration are clearly having a negative impact. Cairo 7 called and emailed the governor's office several times over the past week with the same question, along with any other ideas for relief at the pump for Washingtonians, but have not received any reply. And here's the reality of why I do not believe that Bob Ferguson would ever, at this point in time, he's never going to do it, give a gas tax holiday. Because he is all about politics. And if they give any relief at the pump, during the midterms, when you can very reasonably tie the gas prices to President Trump, that helps President Trump. So he very clearly cares more about Orange Man bad, Democrats winning midterms, than he cares about giving even a slight bit of relief to regular Washingtonians who are having a hard time affording gas. It's the only reason they wouldn't do it. It's because, oh, Trump did it. If it was under Biden, and like there was something going on where Biden had made a decision to attack Iran, or which he never would have because he's a coward, but attack Iran, gas prices went up. First of all, Republicans would be losing their mind, let's be honest, about the double standard. They would absolutely be losing their mind about the increase in gas prices if it was under a Democratic president. But you would have probably Governor Ferguson very willing to reduce prices at the pump if it meant helping out a Democratic president. I asked you guys, and I know, not a great subscriber show poll today. I was really struggling with things to ask you about today. My creative juices were not flowing. But I asked, if gas prices remain high, will it impact your summer travel plans? Nicole?
You know what? It already has a little bit.
Oh.
I mean, I'm a pretty busy person. You know me, I'm always somewhere on the weekends, driving somewhere, and I'm already making the choice to stay home more because it's just unnecessary money and I want it to go towards the things I do have planned in the summer that are important to me.
Yeah.
So I'm already making choices like that.
For the first time yesterday, I contemplated carpooling places because I have some friends in my neighborhood who go to the same gym as me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, maybe I should see if they want to go to the gym, because sometimes we go to like classes. And I was like, oh, maybe I should see if she wants to go to a class and just carpool, because why waste the gas, right?
Right.
So my mind is turning a little bit. But still, 78% of you say no, will not impact summer travel. Aaron says, we've already paid for all the plane tickets, so prices won't affect those plans. Harold says, it must have some impact. Will it stop me from vacationing? No. Will it change where I go or what else I do? Of course it will. I'm made of meat, not money. Meat and bones.
Not money.
Meat, not money. Greg says, personally, I have no plans for summer travel. Long term, this will have an impact on all facets of life. As will the state taxation, CCA, all of those things. Yeah, costs are just increasing. And so you have to take money from somewhere else. Sunfishka says, nope, camping it is no matter what. Good for you. I was talking about me wanting to do some camping.
I am planning a trip down to Portland. I was thinking about the train, thinking that it might be less expensive to take the train.
Oh, yeah. I guess I got to go to the Portland area this weekend. I hadn't thought about that. Just putting the miles on, man. Let's do a couple more. Dahlia, I said no because with the cost of everything else in this state, I have no summer plans. I can't afford them. And that's like everything is adding up, right? And that's one of the first things to go is your travel budget when you're trying to pinch pennies is, you know, travel. All right, let's see here. We're going to get to our weekly segment, Florida Report. Florida officially banning Sharia law. I guess I'm surprised it wasn't banned already. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, or if you're just interested in housing policy, a reminder to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, one of our wonderful show sponsors. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And even if you're not a member, let's say you're not a landlord or a builder or a developer, but you're interested in housing policy, I would go on their website and check out some of the events that they have coming up. They always have great speakers, politicians. I've spoken a couple times, so obviously just fantastic speakers, and their events are always a ton of fun. But if you are a landlord, maybe, you know, got one unit or six units or 10 units, and you just need help navigating the changing environment that we're in, keeping up with changing rules and regulations, RHA is absolutely the best resource for you. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. Okay, it is Thursday. That's when we forget some of the craziness happening in a state like ours and go all the way to the Sunshine State for our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Well, there's posters all up around town talking about the F ICE action that's going to be happening in Seattle, Portland this Saturday, some other cities. Meanwhile, an organization is spending money in Florida to do the opposite, to put things up and fly banners supporting ICE.
Yeah, so the group American Sovereignty, they're a private funded group that they basically are putting up not just in Florida, but all over the Southeast, billboards and the banners that you fly behind airplanes.
Yeah.
Specifically targeting spring, like popular spring break locations, beaches and areas like that. And they say, keep the party American, support ICE.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Keep the party American, support ICE. It is interesting that they're targeting like spring breakers, maybe trying to influence the younger generation to support President Trump's America First policies, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Which is funny because I don't know if the spring break crowd is the same crowd as like the liberal college kids that you see at these protests, but yeah. I think it'll probably fall on the right eyes.
Sure. Yeah, let's go with it. All right. Governor Ron DeSantis, who may or may not be gearing up. What do you think? Is he going to run for president in 2028?
I think so. He just spoke at this Texas Stock Exchange event here in Miami about the boom belt, which is like these southern states that are getting a big boost of population and business growth. And the way he talks, it sounds very much like he's getting himself ready to talk a little bit more about the nation and not just Florida.
So yeah, I thought maybe they'd tap him to replace Pam Bondi, but it doesn't sound like that is going to happen. And maybe that's not what he wants, because that's sort of a temporary gig. And if he's going to run for president. All right. But he signed House Bill 1471, and it basically bans Sharia law. And I guess like, okay, I assume that Sharia law, as it exists and as it is legally binding in other places in the world, like isn't legally binding here. Like you can't commit an honor killing. You know what I mean? That's just murder. So let me just take through some of these because you sent me this handy infographic. So House Bill 1471 does a few things, adding to existing laws in Florida, prohibits courts from applying or enforcing foreign or religious law if it violates constitutional rights. Makes sense. Blocks foreign judgments, contracts, or legal provisions that attempt to bypass those protections. Affirms the U.S. and Florida Constitution as the supreme law in all cases. So along the lines of that, which makes sense. Like, no, your Sharia law does not trump the Constitution of Florida or the United States.
Exactly. And as much as it might seem performative, I think that it's more preemptive than anything, just in case.
Let me play a clip and then we'll talk about the cousin marriage thing, okay? But first, let me play a clip about him saying, like, look, if you're coming here, you know, you need to assimilate to a certain extent.
There's just this view that somehow someone just shows up and they just have a right to be in this country. You don't have a right as a foreigner to be here. And if you're somebody that's coming, is that going to benefit the American people or not? If it's not going to benefit the American people, then why are we even having this conversation? Everything we need to be do is about supporting the people that we were elected to serve.
Yeah. So in talking about Sharia law, he brought up the first cousin marriage thing, which can you remind people like this, it was a thing and they didn't ban it?
Yeah. So this was a line item in a bill that didn't make it through the session down here. Basically, it would ban first cousin marriages, and it was lumped in with a bunch of other things, which is I think why it didn't get passed through. I think they had to like separate some stuff and finish some wording, but he's now bringing that conversation to the forefront of this conversation.
Yeah, so here's what he said about now for House Bill 1471 does not include a ban on marrying your cousin, but no. He's saying that the types of things that it's fighting and trying to prevent and protect against shows why they need to do the ban on marrying your first cousin.
Florida doesn't ban cousin marriage. And that's a hanging curveball for us to do. We need to do that. Other states have done it. I don't know why we wouldn't, but obviously that feeds in to some of the stealth jihad that we see, you know, when you're allowing things like that. It's things that are coming in from other cultures that are not consistent with the United States culture and certainly our culture here in Florida. So this is important, but the larger issue is we have got to stop as a country importing people that reject the values of this country.
Well, is it rejecting the values of Florida if Florida does allow first cousins to be married? Clearly, that's a value of Florida because they haven't banned it yet.
It's true. And I think when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, there was like 10 plus other states that still allowed first cousin marriages. So I think everybody needs to get on board with that so that we can use that as a reason for assimilation is that we don't marry our relatives here.
Wasn't the rumor that Ilhan Omar married her brother? Or like, is that more than a rumor now? Aren't they actually investigating that as potentially true?
I think they are.
I don't know. But it's a good point that, look, if you're coming from a place that has Sharia law, and I'm not one of these no immigrants ever or whatever it is, but I have come to really understand the idea that, you know, there are certain things that make America, America. And if you start importing all these other ideologies and allow them to run rampant, what will America become? So that is a concerning thing. All right, this is a horrible story, and it actually came out right after our last Florida Report segment last week, but we wanted to talk about it today. So Florida convenience store killing sparks immigration debate. This was a brutal murder of a convenience store clerk committed by a Haitian who was here on temporary protected status.
Correct. He came here in 2022. It says that a judge had almost immediately that same year issued an order of deportation, but he was allowed to stay under the temporary protective status that Haitian immigrants get due to it started in 2010 after the big earthquake that happened down there. And ever since then, the country has just been like the health is declining. It's unsanitary. The government is a mess and super corrupt. So under a list of things is why Haitian immigrants get to have a temporary protective status, but I couldn't find out why his status was supposed to be expire in 2024, and I couldn't find out what happened between then and now that allowed him to stay here.
Well, he might have just stayed and waited for them to come round him up or whatever it is, but I think that's a good example of, look, you know, America has over a long period of time provided refuge to people, you know, bring us your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, but that doesn't mean necessarily that entire populations of people from some of these countries should just get to come here who have fundamentally different beliefs, values, you know, dealt with crime is much different, how it's dealt with, law enforcement. And I mean, I've seen the video of this. It's horrible. I would never show it. Maybe there's a mental disorder there or something like that. But these are people who shouldn't be here.
Yeah. And this one's interesting, too, because the crime, like the victim of this crime, her identity is protected under some Florida laws that doesn't allow, you know, people to outwardly report on the victim's identity. But it is being said that she was originally from Bangladesh. I don't know her immigration status, but if she's a legal immigrant that's here working hard and and doing everything that a lot of people are out there protesting that they want, this should be one of those cases that kind of solidifies the conversation that, like, there are bad illegals, and this is why ICE is out here trying to distinguish between the two.
Yeah, and whose side are the leftists going to take? The legal immigrant who is, you know, has a job, and that's assuming that she was a legal immigrant, which I assume if you're working in Florida in a capacity like that, you probably do have to have the proper paperwork versus somebody here. And I'm not saying he's illegal. He's not illegal. I mean, he was here on temporary protected status, but that's why the Trump administration wants to reevaluate those sort of open-ended, yes, you can be here sort of things. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we'll get to your comments from the live stream. And Miranda had to go after Florida Report and get her tooth fixed. She had a crack in a tooth, so you got to give us grace. We've pulled your comments today. No yelling at Nicole and I. First, April, May, a lot of rain, obviously. Although we've had such nice days lately. Hasn't that been glorious to bask in some sunshine? But the rain's going to return, okay? And the last thing you want is clogged gutters. Which is a whole nother issue entirely. But right now, our friends at Valentine Roofing have a deal going on for the month of April, where if you bundle and save a new roof, you get new gutters and 10% off your entire job. So if you get a new roof, 10% off if you add on new gutters to any roofing project. And that kind of makes sense, right? If you're replacing your roof, probably time to replace your gutters as well. They also offer those gutter guards to help keep leaves and needles out for good. So it gives you an additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. And I will say, you know, I've had Valentine at my house, so professional, great attention to detail, no surprise. They've been awarded a bunch of things, including 2025 Best Roofing Company. So you deserve the best. Valentine Roofing can help you out. Take advantage of this new bundle thing they've got going on for the month of April. Schedule your free roofing and gutter estimate today to bundle and save 10%. Call 206-ROOFING. 206-ROOFING. Make sure to tell them, even if you're just calling for an estimate, that you heard about them right here on Undivided. Okay, some comments on the lawsuit filed today against the state income tax. Roberta says, we need to vote no confidence for Bob Ferguson and oust him. No sort of no confidence vote, but you could, there is a, what is the word? What is the word? Come on, somebody give it to my total brain meltdown. There is a recall happening against Bob Ferguson right now, although I don't know how successful it will be. A judge has to determine that there's a valid reason for it to move forward. I don't give a chuck says, I turned down a job at a large aircraft manufacturing company once because I didn't want to join SEIU. Yeah, good for you. Although now you'd have the choice, right? Because now you don't have to join the union. Greg Olakis, hold that thought. The media will be all over it in a bad way. They will spin the Democrat, so Phil Talmadge, to be the traitor and a sellout. Just watch. Oh, I'm sure there will be some liberal rags that spin it, so say Phil Talmadge is a sellout for joining this legal battle, but he's the one who's directly representing the Chamber of Commerce that is like BIPOC people. Right. So, why doesn't this legal team sue over $30 car tabs as well and all the anti-2A laws that we now have? I think they have, not this legal team, but, you know, legal lawsuits. Teams have sued over those things. Eric Vasquez, a Rob McKenna, Bruce Dammeyer governor ticket sounds very appealing right now. Well, one of them would have to run separately for lieutenant governor because you don't have a ticket, right? It's just individual races.
There's no vice governor.
There's no vice governor. The lieutenant governor, but it's a separately elected position. Mm-hmm. Joe Wilson, $5 super chat. Brandy, I really think you should consider writing a book about your past career and how you became who you are now. What would the title be? I don't know. Let me think about that. Kaylee Ann, I'm convinced that they are spoilers. Democrats are not going to change their minds and are just playing games to tailor the suit for guaranteed failure. No, I don't think they're spoilers. I know some people call Rob McKenna a rhino. I hate the word rhino. He has done successfully other lawsuits like this. I guarantee he's going to give it his best. And
why would you jump in?
Why would you want a losing record? Right. Yeah. That doesn't make sense. Mm-mm. Let's see. Eric Gage, for Bob to double down instead of providing relief shows who's who, talking about gas prices and all of that. On SEIU, R says the indivisible groups also operate using mob tactics as well. And the indivisible groups are the groups that are our enemy in this. And yes, I'm going to call them our enemy. And they have absolutely no bottom. Baron of Gray Matter, unions are like the Communist Party. Forced membership and the union requires like CP officials, representatives, and say in decisions at all levels. On the tiny houses, William says drug addicts will stay for as long as they can get drugs. Cut off the drug supply and the drug addicts will go voluntarily. Of course, you need to be coordinated to do that. Yeah, and so cut off the drug supply, but also in your policies, enforce the drug laws. One of the reasons they're here is because they can use drugs out in the open, use drugs in the tiny houses, use drugs in the affordable apartments that we're paying for them to stay in. So there's no motivation for them to get off drugs because nobody does anything about it.
All this does is get them out of people's faces, right?
Right.
So it's just getting them out of sight. And for the World Cup. She says, oh, we have services. You're not forcing services. And nobody that, I mean, it's hard to get off drugs.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to force anybody into services. Then it's not, nobody's going to go into services.
And Shelley points out, use drugs in those tiny homes. They'll have to be destroyed. Yeah. So the tiny homes are going to be good for one person, one stay.
What a waste of money.
Right. Because think of all the hotels that had to be knocked down because people use meth in the hotels.
Right.
I don't give a chuck, doubling down on my daily unbelievable sponsorship. Part one, boop. Part two, no taxation without representation, throwing shade to Washington state government. Let's do a couple more on gas prices. Renee says, I do home health, so I have to drive for my job. My company has not increased our mileage stipend. I'm eating more at home versus eating out. Smokin' Joe, now stay with me on this one. If our governor would suspend our gas tax, our gas prices would be at the same price where other governors are suspending their gas taxes.
Right.
Other states are giving relief when we could only dream of a three-something dollar per gallon gasoline right now. And then there was this super chat that I'm going to read, even though I don't know what it means. It says, Frau Blucher.
And then a picture of a horse.
And I Googled Frau Blucher. It says she is the iconic menacing housekeeper in Mel Brooks' 1974 comedy, Young Frankenstein, portrayed by Cloris Leachman. Are you saying I look like Frau or a horse? Or I don't know, Papa Woody. I don't know which it is.
Her name scares horses in Young Frankenstein. So maybe just saying that scares Bob. I don't know.
Listen, sometimes I don't get you guys, okay? Sometimes maybe there's a generational gap of something. Okay, we have a good closing sanity check. I don't know, for you. Somebody will explain it to me, and I'll read the comments explaining it. First, if you're thinking about leaving the state, maybe even at the early stages, I've heard from so many people, and I know real estate agents across the state, and like tax professionals and all these, they're inundated with business from people who want to leave the state. I hope you stay. I hope you do. But I wouldn't blame a dang person if they decide to leave the state. If you're going to, though, might as well use our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com to sell your home. And also just get started early. Like if it's something that's percolating in your mind, reach out to Wes, like so many people have done, to see what he can offer, any steps you might need to take early on. He gets so many great 5-star reviews. Kyle R. said, we had a great experience selling our house with Wes and his team. Great communication, all the resources, tough negotiator, valuable advisor. He made our house shine and helped us get a tough property sold. We would 100% do business with him. So go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes. Go to his website, sellwithwes.com. You can see all the listings that he's helped his clients sell recently, get a good idea for how he's been able to perform. While you're there, check out the home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And you can also ask him about his Listing Boost concierge service, which is a really tremendous service that they offer to help get your home in tip-top shape to be able to be listed. All right, Nicole, what are you doing? You're pointing at
me. Papa Woody just clarified which...
Oh, Brandy, that's what the Seattle mayor looks like. Okay.
All right.
I was like, what is that? Okay, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Okay, some Canadian progressives are big mad about the new budget proposal from the Prime Minister because it leaves out one particular group of people.
When the budget was released, I was shocked to find out that Prime Minister Carney is cutting $7 billion between Indigenous Services Canada and Crown Indigenous Relations. They provided $0 to deal with the ongoing genocide of MMIWG2SLGBTQQIA+.
Okay. Come again?
MMIWG2SLGBTQQIA+.
MMIWG2SLGBTQQIA+.
Is that like the final boss of wokeism? What is that? So I looked at it. It's missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, What is the IA again? Plus. I don't know. I don't remember what the IA is. But the MM... But she... Can you play the last one again?
Yeah.
She... Seamless.
MMIWG2SLGBTQQIA+.
MMIWG2SLGBTQQIA+.
Which just tells me that she said that a lot.
Oh, intersex. Questioning intersex,
intersex, asexual. Mm-hmm. Plus, which includes the furries and everyone else they left off. All right, that has been our final live show of the week. Thank you so much for joining us throughout the week. We'll have an excellent episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up on Sunday. We're going to talk about potential revisions to our bail system that could be absolutely disastrous for public safety. In the meantime, if you support the work we do, our effort to push out the failing legacy media, send them into bankruptcy and retirement, sign up to support our show for $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. While you're there, you can also shop our merch store. Let your common sense freak flag fly. We've got bumper stickers, or wherever you want to stick them. I don't care. Stick them wherever you want to stick them. They're easily removable. We got totes. We got hats, etc. I think that's it for the housekeeping. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see the rest of you freeloaders on the live show Monday at noon.